kutatsa go tahui es to a mega ka asen ka aru ya ka tili ya tini ha ta ai yisi tini pes ani tansi tini dolli aru te nashi te nana alto sanda bachansa zin dolli ta te nini buko tego e ya ta tili ne ha ti spanja kai aku toba ya seno te tahui aru te nishi te nete ilkei te milet
Last night, in the weariness of all that driving between Albuquerque and Holbrook, sometime in the evening, long after the sun had gone down, I stopped at a truck stop, take a piss. It was somewhere up in the hills, and I rolled in on this very dusty, dry dirt road with my headlights illuminating the dust that was raised by two or three tractor trailers moving around in circles and cutting back in order to make their way out of a small parking lot. Relatively small, I mean, compared to the size of the trucks. And I pulled up to this lit up window and door for the entrance to this little coffee shop and the truck stop. And the air was full of dust, and right near the door where I pulled up was a old beat up green car with an Indian sitting inside. And it was something about the fluorescent light coming out of the rest stop restaurant and illuminating that this dark Riverstone green color of a car and a dusty window and this old man with a cowboy hat behind the window in the driver's seat. And he barely moved, his eyes just moved slightly to take me in and then move back towards the door. And there was something of both horror and beauty, something mixed in that. I mean, it looked like he was part of a diorama in a museum, which was the saddest part, because I couldn't tell if that was because I knew so little about Indian culture and that Indians were so foreign to me living in New York. Or was it something that he'd been reduced to in this country? You know, I've just taken a drive this a few days later after that last recording. It's like the 27th or 28th of, I guess the 27th of February. I don't know, I hear there's gonna be a sun eclipse next week, next Tuesday. Tell you shouldn't look into the sun or you'll damage your eyes. When I think about talking into this machine, as usual, I get incredibly self-conscious, but beyond that, it's like all I can think to talk about is my anxieties, but maybe by talking about my anxieties, I can break through to something else. And then if I don't break through to something else, it doesn't really matter. At least that's the mood I'm in. All this emptiness, all this desolation sometimes feels like one big great mirror held up to my own heart, my own mind, my own soul, if you will. But I just feel very desolate, very sad, very anxious, a little bit scared. And the thing that I keep thinking about is my own death, of not wanting to die, this incredible fear of dying. If I really think about it, like if I think of sentences like, oh, are you going to David's funeral? Are you going to Wanarovich's funeral? I freeze. If I think of myself lying inside some plain box, or whatever form of burial I'll one day have, it just makes me freeze. Right now I'm riding through all this beautiful landscape. It's just scrub, brush, landscape, plains, and these brown, dark mountains in the distance, covered with smog or smoke from the fireplaces this time of year. And big explosions of trees just suddenly uttering out of the earth, uttering out of crevices in the earth, and it's really wonderful. It's a feeling of winter, and yet the sun's so warm. I just don't know which direction to go in. It's like I live in New York, and living in that city, it's one of the most cruel cities I've lived in. I mean, I remember going to Mexico City and walking around and, you know, riding around the outskirts at some point around the slums and just realizing that that was the future of New York. I mean, it's 20 million people, half the male workforce unemployed, and the poverty was just so extreme. And if you weren't poor, you were rich. And basically, there seemed to be very little middle ground, at least on the obvious surface, because the poverty was that extreme. I remember some Mexican kid saying, "Oh, you're rich," you know, because you could travel around. And I was thinking, like, where I come from, I'm hardly rich. I have a few thousand in the bank or something. But I realized in Mexico City, yeah, it is rich. In New York, it may as well be. I mean, if you're sleeping in a cardboard box, getting some grating in the wintertime, or forced to go into a shelter with a bunch of lunatics and desperate people. Yeah, no, you're rich if you have your own windows, your own four walls, whatever. So living in that city, it's just a city of death. I mean, what with the disease killing most of my friends, a handful of my friends, but the weight of that is so great that it feels like it's most of my friends. Maybe the people I most cared about have died. And if I can think about people who have died, I've got some kind of distance. It puts distance against my own disease, my having this disease. But so in that moment, if I could talk about other people who have died, it's like, yes, I'm very much alive. And it eases up some of the anxiety I have about the possibilities of death. It's just that I don't know how to take care of myself. I've never learned how to take care of myself in the most obvious ways. I mean, I've always gone on a level day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month survival. And it hasn't been extreme for me by any means the last few years. I mean, with the money I've made from my work, and it's eased that up a little bit, but there's still this tension in me because despite whatever money I have or don't have, I don't know how to take care of basics. I never learned to use tools in a way in terms of preservation or self-preservation, in terms of my health, in terms of my body, in terms of whatever. And then suddenly being a physician to have to work to live, have to try to live, have to make extra effort that most other people have the luxury of not having to take in hand. I don't know where, if I'm going to make it. And I come out here and I'm riding around this New Mexico landscape, and there's something I just love about the landscape, but there's something overwhelming and even frightening in moments, but it's absolutely embracing. I mean, whatever the body feels like in the midst of so much space, where you can just look to the mountains, and it's unreal. It's like a train set landscape, postcard landscape, postcard clouds. It's all the references are so surreal. And I could even think of living here, or living somewhere in this remoteness. But it's like there's something I have to give up, something that I carry, something that I've carried since I was a kid, and I'm not even sure what that is. And so I live in New York City, and I isolate the hell out of myself, and I barely see people. I hardly ever talk to people. One or two people I'll talk to daily, but even then, it's like there's a sense of stasis of not moving in a certain way, and in another way, it's like marking time, like marking a calendar day by day, but it's not what I want. And coming out here and living in remoteness or desolation isn't particularly what I want, but it's something I wish I could do. And I don't, something tells me I can, because it's like the people that one's surrounded by out here, at least the sense I have from Albuquerque or some of the cities I've passed through, it's just as fucking desperate as New York. It's like, it's a desperation of a nation, of a society, of an illusory tribe. It's just this grappling with something that is totally pre-invented, and we're all rushing towards it, and we're all moving towards it, and it just amazes me that some people find it easy, or some people find it pleasurable. I don't think I do in the long run. Comes on the radio, and it's a day filled with fast trucks, day of sunlight, and all these clouds, just huge clouds, and you can turn your head from left to right, 360 degrees, and all you see is sky, and sometimes the most amazing cliff formations, and red sandstone, and red dirt. But in these moments when a song comes on the radio, something that you like driving to, it's kind of hard suddenly thinking of people like Peter or Keith or Paul, all of them having died from AIDS, and like just thinking about Peter, just knowing that he's never going to hear this song, and he'll never, and then suddenly feeling like it's a moment of a mortality hallucination where I realize just how alive I am, and also the impermanence of it. But yeah, I'm alive, but you know, I could be dead another year from now or 2 years from now, and I won't see this road, and I won't see this sunlight, and I won't see these fast trucks driving by, a long, long road up ahead of me, and a long, long road in the rearview mirror. And time just moves so slow, and time moves so fast, and then time stands still for some, and time just speeds up for others. For me at this moment, I'm in quite a dislocation of time. We're both outside of time and inside of time at the same time. And all the world looks pretty great. don't know, every, it's like now a month later, I'm back in New York. Month and a half, I don't know, but I've been going through this thing the last week where every, all day long, I just feel this weird fatigue. And I'm realizing fear, or fear of death, because it's like you can go along and put things image-wise or information-wise to the side, or it's an act of denial or something almost healthy in that sense in terms of preservation, where I end up denying my own illness, or it's more like a small fiction that I'm carrying, or I make it into a small fiction so that I continue on and I feel excited about certain things and feel drives towards certain things. And what tips me off that it's no longer working is my compulsiveness of suddenly feeling a compulsiveness towards hundreds of different activities, some of them benevolent or beneficial, some of them impossible, and it's like taking a walk and every 3 seconds changing direction in terms of where you're walking, like turning to making a right turn or a left turn or a backtrack, and only it's psychic rather than physical. And I realize those periods take place, or at least I'm starting to see something forming in a sort of elusive clarity, where what's happening is every time I, you know, like go through these periods where every time I turn around, suddenly people are dying, suddenly people are dying in numbers, suddenly I see a photograph on a gallery wall of somebody who I saw 5 months ago or 6 months ago who looked relatively healthy and who I engaged in conversations with and who I grew to love in those minutes of knowing them, thinking that whether it's connecting with a member of one's tribe or connecting with a member of another tribe who represents something one would love to become in the course of living, hearing their stories, hearing something about their humanity or their vision or whatever, and in that, you know, sitting at a dinner and getting to know somebody over a period of the evening and feeling this incredible potential in terms of action or movement or activity, and suddenly walking into a gallery to go look at something you've vaguely heard about some show, and then seeing a photograph of this person emaciated in a hospital and surrounded by colored balloons and objects and toys and light, and attending a memorial for somebody who I don't know but know a little bit of through somebody else that I hardly know, and then listening to this personality or this person take shape in the words of all these people giving testimonial at this memorial as to what was now missing from our midst in the form of this person and personality, and realizing that I've been coasting on just doing some limited drug stuff, and suddenly here's somebody who looked fairly together physically 4 months ago, suddenly almost dead, or so close to the verge of death, that thing that you become to recognize of where the body can go sometimes in this disease. And so that feeling, okay, I don't have signs of these things at the moment, so therefore I've got like a reprieve or an extension of time, and therefore I can use this denial, therefore I can create this fiction of the disease, or create a fiction out of it that I carry, so that, yes, I have this virus, yes, I have this disease, yes, I have certain symptoms, but at the moment, the vessel that carries these words, the vessel that carries this energy of living or movement or impulse, if I look in the mirror, I see something fairly okay or fairly together in terms of, yes, I can still use this body as a vehicle, or this body is still a vehicle and it's not breaking down. But then realizing that the breakdown can come momentarily, or it could come in years. And trying to understand what I fear about death, like what I fear about living, what comes out of the two, or what rockets or ricochets between the two ends of the spectrum, if it's indeed a spectrum at all. And but none of that matters. It's just that suddenly I'm feeling all this fatigue all this past week. And I get up and I feel this fatigue and I feel some fear behind it, and I feel some depression behind it, or some depression coming up over it, because I don't know what it means. I don't know if it's a sign. I don't know if it means that I'm now about to go into a severe decline. And even if I'm not going into decline, the fatigue itself robs me of being able to follow compulsion, which is a sign of this period. And then resisting compulsion, but suddenly recently feeling like I have to follow this compulsion because maybe it will lead me out of a period like this. Because if I, as in resisting compulsion and saying, okay, I won't permit myself to be compulsive, I have to focus in on certain activities, like I want to get back to my writing, or I want to make something, or I want to paint, or I want to make some photographs, or I want to do this, or I want to do that. By resisting the compulsion, I fall into a state that's that state that I described a few minutes ago of taking a walk and changing direction every other second, so that really you end up nowhere, or I end up walking in place, or I end up treading water. And so then I decided within the last couple of days, okay, I have to follow this compulsion, but I don't have the energy to follow the compulsion. I feel sick. I feel something in the pit of my stomach like a rock. I don't know if it's anxiety. I don't know if it's something physical that's real in terms of this virus. Really, I just don't want to fucking die. You know, maybe people invent words for these things. Maybe they call things like this panic, but it upsets me because panic isn't, it's not that fucking simple. And the idea of all this sensation being reduced to a word called panic is insulting.